Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We are going to talk about a couple of issues of great import to our country in the next two blocks. We're going to start with a major theme of this program, enemies without, enemies elsewhere, enemies foreign. And then we're going to turn to the problems here, enemies within. The man who is on top of both, I think, to an extraordinary degree, is one of our regulars, I'm proud to say. His name is Charles Sam Faddis. He has a distinguished record of public service in the uniform of the United States Army, operating without a uniform as an undercover operative in the Central Intelligence Agency's clandestine service. As a candidate for Congress, as a man in the defense industry sector for some time, and now, and now as a driving force behind a really important online resource, also available at Substack, called andmagazine.com. Charles Sam Faddis is his name. We're always delighted to have him with us. We'll get into both the enemies, foreign and domestic, with him right now. Charles, Sam, welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Always good to be here, Frank. Thank you very much.
I want to riff off a couple of things that you've been writing recently at AND and encourage, again, our audience to check them out for themselves. Time to stop sleeping with the Chinese enemy seems to me to be a pretty apt way to describe what we're doing, not just in the literal sense, the person of Eric Swalwell, for example, but more broadly. Talk about that metaphor as you mean it and the extent to which it really is compromising the national security of the United States.
Well, Frank, you know, it's like with a lot of things, you sort of get dragged into something where reality sort of emerges around you. And maybe at some point it gets, you know, it's that sort of, you can't see the forest for the trees kind of impact. I mean, let's just stop for a second and think about the Chinese Communist Party and who they are and the mortal threat they've posed to this country and their objective, which is to become the dominant power on the planet, which they are pursuing relentlessly. None of this is open to dispute, right? You can't just open your ears or open your eyes. They will tell you all day, every day, exactly what they're about. And we get into, like, we're currently wrestling with, so I hope we're wrestling with, the issue of Taiwan, which is effectively under blockade as we speak. And we're actually seriously talking about the possibility of war with the Chinese. And nobody is talking about the fact that, okay, but everything at a really macro level in your national security strategy, if there is such a thing anymore, is completely opposed to any objective to be able to stand up to the Chinese. I mean, we have destroyed our manufacturing base. We are reliant on them for everything. I mean, down to the point of, if we get into a shooting war, the medicine you're going to need to treat our battlefield casualties comes out of China. I mean, down to that level. And yet we're continuing to trundle down this road. We're letting them loot our intellectual property. We're letting them buy our politicians. We're to the point where we can barely, you talk about a shooting war in which ships get sunk, and we're going to build new ships where? In the handful of shipyards that we have left that can do that, using components, half of which have to come from overseas. In the course of researching the article, it struck me that one of the things I tripped across was that for the new version of the C-130 transport, which is also the base for the gunships and so forth, we have to buy the wings for those planes from India. Mm. Now, at least we're not buying them from Beijing, but we don't even have the capability onshore to make wings for our transport. So obviously, if we're serious about confronting the Chinese in anything, as you know better than anybody, we got to climb out of bed with these guys. We have to fundamentally change everything out about our relations. Not around the margins. We just got to go to the heart of the matter.
We've done a couple of programs, as you know, Sam, on these topics. Indeed, just yesterday, our Committee on the Present Danger of China, of which you are a very important member, had a fascinating and frankly very alarming webinar on this very subject of our dependence on China for supply chains, for everything from medicine, as you've mentioned, to flat screens and silicon chips, to steel, to component parts, silicon chips not least among them, that are critical to our, well, economic competitiveness for one thing, but also to our national security. People can get the videotape of this webinar at presentdangerchina.org, and I strongly commend it to you because it makes in spades the point that Sam Faddis has just illuminated. And I guess the question, Sam, is if our politicians are, as you put it, in bed with China, corrupted, co-opted, not exactly first and foremost, at least, animated by the national interests of the United States, how do we fix the magnitude of the problem that you're talking about? How do we get a course correction other than, I guess, by getting ourselves a new set of politicians? How important, for example, is it in your estimation that, well, for want of a better term, we purge our political elites of people who have these compromised relationships with the Chinese Communist Party?
I think it's the heart of the matter, Frank, to be honest with you. I think if folks don't understand that that is required, they don't have their hands around the magnitude of the issue. Mm-hmm. We have a huge number of individuals in public office or in other positions of power who are owned by, completely in bed with the CCP. They are playing for the other team. And, yeah, and just asking them to do the right thing isn't going to get it done because their objectives and your objectives are no longer the same. And I will put the exclamation mark on it. I always do, as a, you know, as a guy whose job it was not just to stop the enemy, but to do to the enemy what they are doing to us. Mm-hmm. It's not just blackmailing people, and it's not just kind of getting them to see the world the way you do. The objective of an intelligence agency, and the Chinese are doing this in spades, is to recruit controlled assets. Mm-hmm. That means they take money and they do what you order them to do. In fact, mm-hmm. in CIA, if your asset will not follow such instructions, it is not considered to be an asset. Mm-hmm. If you don't have control, he doesn't count, basically. Right. The Chinese work the same way. So don't just think you're talking about some folks that kind of are weak-kneed. Mm-hmm. In this mix here are folks who are literally taking orders from Beijing. That's the cold hard truth. And it may sound fantastic, but it is not.
Well, it sounds really dangerous is what it sounds like. And Sam, let me just say, you have documented what you've said along with Trevor Loudon in a tremendously important resource we call the Accountability Initiative. Accountabilityinitiative.org is where it can be found. Over two dozen, I think, now dossiers on individuals who have these sorts of compromises. The commander-in-chief, of course, is in that category, and it goes downhill from there with his cabinet and sub-cabinet officers. This is such an important point, and I remarked in a commentary this week that if Joe Biden were working for the Chinese Communist Party, were working for the Chinese Communist Party, I should say, is there anything that he would be doing differently than what we're seeing right now? Sam, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the further problem that we have with enemies of within, and that is those that are taking down our election integrity. Some of them are the same people, frankly. We're going to get a firsthand look at what's happening in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania from one of its residents, Sam Faddis, right after this. We'll be right back. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We were once told that Merrick Garland was a great Supreme Court nominee as he had, quote, unwavering fidelity to the rule of law, unquote. Indeed, when now Attorney General Garland announced yesterday that he had personally authorized the FBI raid on former President Trump's home, he declared, quote, faithful adherence to the rule of law is the bedrock principle of the Justice Department and of our democracy. All Americans are entitled to the even-handed application of the law, to due process of the law, and to the presumption of innocence, unquote. As we await the pretext given a federal magistrate to approve that raid, one thing is already clear. Donald Trump has not gotten equal treatment under law as that given prominent Democrats like Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, or Sandy Berger. For such weaponizing of the Justice Department, Garland must be impeached if he won't resign. This is Frank Gaffney. We're back. We're continuing our conversation with Sam Faddis, one of our regulars here at Securing America, a prodigiously impressive intellect, a force for good, in my estimation, here in this most dangerous of moments. We've been talking about the threat we're facing from the Chinese Communist Party and the help it's getting. And we've focused on the elites that have been captured in our political class, but unfortunately they've done the same to business leaders, financial mavens on Wall Street, to academic institutions and leaders, as well as, of course, Hollywood and the media. This is a comprehensive program. They've been at it a long time, and as Sam says, with the expertise of someone who was in that line of work, the Chinese Communist Party's intelligence services and other instruments of the state have been hard at it and made huge strides in terms of putting us in a very disadvantaged position to deal with the prospect of war, not just the unrestricted kind that they've been waging against us for some time, but perhaps the kinetic kind, which may now be in the offing, alas. Sam, I wanted to turn with you to another topic that I know has been taking a lot of your time and energy of late, and that is trying to sort out what happened in the 2020 election, particularly the presidential one, but more broadly, what is still happening to election integrity in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, from whence you hail these days. Tell us what the lay of the land is like at the moment, both retrospective and prospective, because it bears very directly on the next election that is looming in November.
Well, the short version would be this. In the 2020 election, there is no question whatsoever that there are massive issues in Pennsylvania. I mean, the best you could possibly say about the 2020 election is nobody knows who won. That's if you were being really, really, really charitable. I think it's obvious that to most people that have objectively looked at it, that Joe Biden did not win the state. And it's not about, you know, you don't have to, Bigfoot has no involvement here. You don't have to visit Roswell on a regular basis or believe in Atlantis. This has nothing to do with any of that. This is just common sense and the fact that systematically we moved to this crazy system of mail-in voting and drop boxes, and then more or less systematically boiled out of it every measure that could give you any sense of security, any sense that we had any idea where these ballots were coming from or they were valid. And here's the really terrifying part. We're getting ready to go into another general election. patriot movement across the state, with which I am very heavily involved, has been up in arms about this for now 2 years. Our state legislature that remains under Republican control has done not one single meaningful thing to change the system. So we are getting ready to go into the next general election, laughing because it's better than crying, I guess. We're going to run the next general election as it stands now, using exactly the procedures that were shown to be so disastrous last time. And there is no serious effort underway in the legislature right now to do anything about it, which is why we've been organizing the entire Patriot movement into this coalition of groups, now over 100 groups in Pennsylvania. And our demand on the legislature is very simple. You take us back to in-person voting with hard copy ballots on election day. Yes, limited exceptions for absentee ballots. We're not disenfranchising anybody. Well, no more no excuse mail-in voting, no more drop boxes. Take us back to a system we can believe in. That's the lay of the land. The legislature is going to have to be forced to do.
Yeah. And Sam, as I understand it, that legislature has had FBI agents visiting it. And I think subpoenas maybe as well. But there seems to be an effort afoot to counteract whatever efforts people like yourself are making, patriots, seeking the old-fashioned kind of election integrity guarantees. What's going on with that, and how is this likely to sort? There's not much time left. We're within 90 days of an election. Can anything be done at this point, do you think?
Well, in terms of what the Bureau is doing, yeah, we have now moved, and I think this is part and parcel of what's happening across the whole country, from the part where we just shout you down and tell you you're a conspiracy theorist if you try to investigate anything, to, well, now we're just going to go to thugs and muscle and intimidating people. And we've seen that that includes the ex-president of the United States, right? We're going to barge into Mar-a-Lago. The other day, they stopped Scott Perry, who's a congressman from Pennsylvania, who's the leader of the Freedom Caucus, tracked him down on vacation to seize his cell phone from him. No explanation. 2 days ago now.
No warrant either, as far as I can tell.
Just hey, we're gonna the Gestapo, give us your phone. Two days ago now, I guess it was, the FBI shows up in Harrisburg. They're going around issuing subpoenas and questioning people. All of these folks were associated with a legal challenge to the 2020 election and the creation of an alternate slate of electors, presidential electors, which would vote for Trump in the event, there's the critical point, in the event that the legal challenge was successful, in the event there was a court ruling by a U.S. district court in their favor, they would have ready this alternate slate of electors. No sedition, no insurrection, nothing. That is now somehow being transformed into a crime, apparently. And I guess the message is that this is all related to a grand jury that is sitting somewhere. I will expect that it's completely believable that they will trot out charges and start arresting people. Yeah. Obviously, you know the playbook here. This is straight out of every tin pot dictatorship in the world. Right. If you won't be quiet, we will take you and lock you up. And then we will hope that the rest of you get the message and shut up.
Yeah, it works like a top in most places. And the question is, will it here? Sam Fettes, just yesterday, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, was explaining that he had personally approved this FBI, well, jackboot style raid on the Trump residence at Mar-a-Lago. And in the course of it, he professed this profound commitment to the rule of law and equal treatment under the law and the presumption of innocence and all that. And I just ask you, this would seem to be just another example, what the FBI is doing in Pennsylvania and what they've been up to in Mar-a-Lago and with the January 6th, you know, defendants and so much more. That's the antithesis of the rule of law. Just very quickly, you've lived overseas, you've seen a lot of tyrannies, you've worked against them, God love you. What are the prospects that if we don't get back to that foundational principle, as Merrick Garland himself called it, that we will see this tin pot dictatorship perhaps emerge here?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Frank, you're already seeing it emerge. We're standing on the edge of the cliff. This is not hyperbole. This is not science fiction. That's where we are. What has happened in Harrisburg, Mar-a-Lago with Perry is going to continue to happen, and it's going to expand. They're coming for everybody. They have to be stopped, and they got to be stopped now. People have to stop thinking that, oh, yeah, that was bad, but we're going to go back to some kind of normal. There is no normal anymore. We've broken every convention and every taboo. That's the horrible, sick truth.
Well, we have to have you back soon for a conversation about how do we stop this. We're obviously not talking about violence or, you know, civil war, but the question is, what are the available mechanisms to prevent this cliff from now being, you know, our fate, unfortunately, rather than something that we see and recognize as a mortal peril to our republic and avoid? Sam Faddis, your work in Pennsylvania and nationally and internationally, both past and present, is deeply appreciated, my friend. Thank you for joining us, and I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. We'll be right back with more of Securing America right after this.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Back, and we're visiting with other extraordinary people that I've had the privilege of coming into contact with here at the Dallas Conservative Political Action Conference. And one of them is in the category that I consider to be particularly important at a moment like this in our country's history. I call them foreign-born American patriots. Her name is Angela Grabowski. She is a financial advisor by profession in Indianapolis, Indiana. She also happens to be the Republican nominee for the congressional seat of the 7th District of Indiana. And we've just met, but we've had an interesting preliminary conversation. I'm very glad to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for getting into the arena, but most especially, thank you for being a foreign-born American patriot. You came from the Soviet Union. You were a persecuted Soviet Jewess. Talk a little bit about what America means to you based on your insights about what the rest of the world is like.
You know, when we have a conversation about America and the patriotism and the love of America in our hearts, we tell people we would die for America. If there is a war tomorrow, we would not need to be called. We would volunteer.
Thank you.
We would give our lives for this country, the country that embraced us, that allowed us to feel like human beings.
Coming here with basically nothing.
With nothing.
As I understand it.
With nothing. You know, a story. Once we came to the United States, what we wanted.
What year?
We came in 89. But what we did, because we've lived through so much pain and despair, we blocked all of our memories of the past, and all we wanted to know is what America is all about, what is capitalism all about, why we weren't allowed to learn about all of this, and we wanted to assimilate. We didn't want it to be Ukrainian Americans, we didn't want to be Soviet Union Americans, we didn't want to be Jewish Americans, we wanted to be Americans. We came to the States.
You wanted to be free.
Yes, we wanted to be free. Yeah. Free of the government telling us who we can and cannot be, what we can and cannot believe, what we can and cannot wear, what we can and cannot eat, say. Yeah. So people don't understand.
But Angela, talk a little bit about, I get that they don't understand. All too many of us take it for granted.
Absolutely.
That we'll always be free. You've experienced life without freedom. And you have, I'm sure, a special appreciation for the perishability of freedom. That it is not guaranteed by any means.
It can go away in the blink of an eye.
Are you worried that that is what is afoot right now?
And this is the reason why I decided to run for the congressional seat. I never thought that I would be running for government. I'm not known for my political correctness. I am a life student. I like learning about the life, and I like learning about what's happening in the world. So I have a lot of different opinions. But I can tell you that the last couple of years have been very tough on all of us. It started with Twitter not allowing the duly elected president of the United States to have his voice heard. Free speech. And again, we didn't grow up with free speech. We always looked behind our shoulders, seeing if there was somebody out there, what we can,
listening,
cannot say,
reporting,
listening. We were afraid
turning
of
you in.
Knocks on the doors. We
right.
had, you know, the Soviets
You've
raised a generation
it.
Of snitches. We couldn't tell people what our opinions are.
That was the original canceling, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then
off to
I
the
see
gulag.
Now this canceling is happening
here.
Right here.
Yeah.
So freedom of speech is very important.
Right.
I want to be able to say what I feel and what I think.
So you have gotten in the arena, as I
yes.
said. You are a candidate, the Republican
mm-hmm.
Party's official nominee for
yes.
the 7th District. In Indiana, you have an opportunity, I hope,
mm-hmm.
to be using the platform of, you know, a campaign, mm-hmm. obviously, but also of debates
yes.
with
Andre Carson?
Andre Carson.
Andre Carson, I just have to volunteer. We don't do partisan politics here, but Andre Carson is a Muslim Brotherhood operative.
Yes.
As well as a radical leftist Marxist. I don't believe he cares a fig for our freedoms. And to have the people of that district given a real choice, a stark choice, between a pro-American
Pro-freedom-loving candidate,
want to preserve this country, make it stronger than it is today, and one who I think is all about the fundamental transformation of it, is the kind of choice that I would hope we would see more of in this country, and people seizing the opportunity to make a course correction. That's a personal view.
It's a personal view.
I'm so appreciative that you are out there working to give them that choice, Angela. You have, I suspect, the passion to actually, if elected, bring about that course correction.
Yes.
Just a closing word, because we're almost out of time. Why should people outside of this district, as well as inside, be following this race and caring about it?
First of all, because of my opponent and everything that you just mentioned about him. Second, because he's considered the least effective member of Congress. He is there because of his skin color and his beliefs. And because I really care about Indianapolis. Indianapolis gave me all the opportunities in the world. I want everybody there to have the opportunities. And we need to stop all of the policies that are coming from Biden's and Pelosi's and the Carson's administrations. Yeah. If we don't do it, if we don't reverse the course, I think this country is going to fall. Out there on the ground, I already see that there are a lot of people who are voting for Democrats, would love to vote for us, but they have no freedom of speech. They cannot come out. They cannot tell their party. They're being silenced. Exactly.
Yeah.
And they're afraid to be censored.
We have to leave it at that. Angela Gabrowski, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to those of you who I hope will take an interest in her.
And people
race.
Can go to angelaforindiana.com to see who we are and how our campaign is going.
We'll be right back with more Securing America
thank
right
you.
After this.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. We were once told that Merrick Garland was a great Supreme Court nominee as he had, quote, unwavering fidelity to the rule of law, unquote. Indeed, when now Attorney General Garland announced yesterday that he had personally authorized the FBI raid on former President Trump's home, he declared, quote, faithful adherence to the rule of law is the bedrock principle of the Justice Department and of our democracy. All Americans are entitled to the even-handed application of the law, to due process of the law, and to the presumption of innocence, unquote. As we await the pretext given a federal magistrate to approve that raid, one thing is already clear. Donald Trump has not gotten equal treatment under law as that given prominent Democrats like Hillary Clinton, Eric Holder, or Sandy Berger. For such weaponizing of the Justice Department, Garland must be impeached if he won't resign. This is Frank Gaffney. Thank you. Welcome back, and a very distinct welcome to our next guest. He is one of our duty experts on communist China. We touched on the subject a bit earlier in the program with Sam Faddis, but we're going to do a bit deeper dive with Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps retired, a man of many parts and very considerable talent. He has been in previous incarnations a foreign service officer, businessman in East Asia. He is an attorney by training. He is these days a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy and another member of our Committee on the Present Danger, China. And we're privileged to call him a friend as well as a very valued colleague, and always delighted to welcome him back to Securing America. Grant, it's good to have you with us, sir. Welcome.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
I have so much I want to talk to you about. I guess where I'd like to start is a current assessment as a senior military officer looks at these matters of what the Chinese are up to at the moment with respect to Taiwan. We had one of our valued colleagues, also member of the Committee on the Present Danger of China, Jim Fennell, on yesterday talking a bit about his perspective on it, but I'm anxious to get yours. He thinks this is really the run-up to an invasion of Taiwan, not simply a blockade or efforts to sort of coerce it from afar. Your thoughts, sir?
Well, it's hard to say, you know, unless you know exactly what Xi Jinping thinks. But the point is that China has the capability to launch an invasion of Taiwan. And the more important thing is it probably thinks it could succeed. It has developed this capability over the last 20 years or more, and now it has come together pretty well. Plus, I would have suggested that even 10 years ago, if they were really serious, didn't mind casualties, they could have gotten onto Taiwan. They've just gotten better since then. I think you have to regard this as when you're thinking about it, what's the worst that could happen? And that is an all-out invasion. And you have to prepare for that. And it's really what the Chinese think, not what we think. So right. This is a real danger. And I've heard it dismissed as, well, it's 2 years off, it's 5 years off, it's a decade off. Well, they could do it tomorrow if they want it. And they've gotten the capability to do this from a standing start, and even without us getting much notice. So, you know, one dismisses this at their own peril. So I agree with Captain Fennell.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about something that he also spoke to your point, that they could do it from more or less a standing start with little notice. He agreed with me that there is, in all of this, the you know, live fire exercises surrounding the island, the penetration of the air defense identification zone, crossing the center line and all of that, by the Chinese now on a regular basis, what he calls the new normal, a very profound impact, I fear, on what we think of as indicators and warnings, to use the sort of technical parlance of the intelligence community and the military. Are you concerned about that as well, Colonel, that we're just now becoming sort of inured to the idea that the Chinese are going to be very forward deployed and possibly at any moment go for it?
Yes, I am. We're psychologically conditioned to the Chinese having sort of pushed the benchmark. And now people say, oh, it's just what they do. It's nothing to worry about. But if you look at how things have developed over the last 5 years and then anticipate how they're going to play out in the future, rather than just sticking with what is happening right now, you've got to be very concerned. Plus, as yes. I said, we talk about indicators and warnings, and we assume we're going to get this, 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 and this, because that's how we would do it. The Chinese could do this from a standing start. And that's something that, you know, I wish we would pay more attention to, because there's just too much dismissiveness of this in Washington and even in Taiwan itself. There isn't the alarm that there should be, once again, because people get conditioned to this. And remember all the people who said, oh, Putin would never invade Ukraine. He's just posturing, just wants a deal. And then one day it happens.
Right. And it happened in collusion with Xi Jinping, by the way.
Completely.
And I think that the nature of that collusion was that as part of their no limits partnership, China would support Russia on Ukraine, and Russia would sure support China on Taiwan, no?
Well, they said that. There was actually official word that went out via Chinese propaganda ministry, or whatever it's called, that said, Goei, don't criticize Russia, because when the time comes to settle Taiwan once and for all, the Russians are going to help us in return.
Yes, I'm sure.
Those Chinese always tell us what they're going to do and what they're thinking. We just choose not to believe them.
Yeah, which goes back to something you touched on a moment ago, Grant. I must say, hearing Defense Department leaders saying this is 2 years off is such a profound, the layman's parlance, it's whistling past the graveyard, it seems to me, trying to, you know, hopefully not see what you don't want to see, but it's malfeasance, I would say, on the part of those who have a duty to actually defend against this kind of danger. And by the way, I would just say, and ask you quickly to respond, because we have to take a short break here in a moment. The worst case is not just an invasion of Taiwan, I fear. It's an attack against American assets, personnel, and maybe even territory in the process. What do you say?
Well, that would be part of the deal, potentially, that our very limited bases that are juicy targets in Asia get whapped by the Chinese. So that is part. That's probably going to happen if China does go all out. Yeah. So that's a real concern. And even a bigger concern is the slow strangulation we're seeing with Chinese inroads in Latin America, Africa, most of the world. And we seem as if we're transfixed. If you're looking at a cobra, you just can't make yourself move. And there's bigger problems than just Taiwan, and we don't seem to be doing what's necessary to deal with it.
Yeah, we heard at some length from Sam Faddis about a contributing factor to that being the capture of our political and other elites, which may well be contributing dramatically to this passivity, this inaction, this whistling past the graveyard, if you will. As I mentioned, we have to take a quick break, Grant Newsom. When we come back, I'd like to visit with you a bit more about other aspects of this China threat, but also what we need to be doing about it right now. We'll get to that and much more on the other side of this short break. Stay tuned, please. Welcome back. Colonel Grant Newsom, United States Marine Corps, is in the house virtually. We're catching up with him, I believe, in Japan. We're always delighted to get an update from him, forward deployed as he is in the battle space that may well go very hot very soon, namely the Western Pacific. You were talking before the break, Grant, about the passivity that we are exhibiting in the face of growing evidence that the Chinese are not only telling us what they're going to do, but they are actively in the process of doing it, perhaps going into a very full-on kinetic phase here shortly. And, you know, we recently published a book, as you know, our Team B3, about the fact that, well, as we call it, the CCP is at war with America. I want to commend it again to our listeners. It's available for free as a downloadable PDF at ccpatwar.com. One of the points that it is really chilling is 20-odd years ago, Epoch Times, an outfit you've been associated with over the years, published a secret speech by the then defense minister of China to party cadre, in which he was talking about, among other things, biological warfare against America in terms that now I think are being validated by the day. But Grant, they also, his remarks also featured a comment to the effect that there's going to be a lot of talk about Taiwan, but the real enemy, the real target, is the United States. Against the backdrop of all of this, I ask you, as a serious military thinker and practitioner, what should we be doing now that in our passivity, in our wishful thinking, in our cognitive dissonance, we're not?
Well, you've got to stop funding and propping up the Chinese Communist Party's economy.
Amen.
And that is what we're doing. If you don't do that, how can you possibly hope to prevail? It has been clear what the Chinese think of us, what they intend to do. It is just absolute insanity that we continue to pour convertible currency on which they depend into that country, along with business and technology. And then we have done nothing when they've killed 100,000 of us, American citizens.
A million, with, actually.
Well, a year. That's,
if you want to throw in the COVID as well as the fentanyl.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the fentanyl drugs, which is, you know, it's chemical clear warfare. Where it comes from, who's doing it, and what they could do. And they kill 100,000 of us a year, and nobody does a thing. And that tells you that China has gotten their money's worth from our elite. I would encourage people to look at Peter Schweitzer's book. It's Amen. A prosecutor's brief of the buyout of the American elite classes. And you'll notice nobody sues him. And that tells you everything. So the economic financial front is where you want to do it. But also you've got to make it clear that you're serious. Not sort of, well, we want to cooperate with you on climate change, but we're going to compete here and there. Well, these are people who are out to kill us. And I encourage people to read the Chinese press for a week. The English translations will do. And you look at listen to the contempt, the vitriol in it. Encourage them to do it. So we have to make it clear we're going to fight and we will defend ourselves and that it's not business as usual. But if you don't demonstrate the will, now you could shift forces to Asia and put six more F-22s out there and a few more ships and submarines. But if they don't think you're serious, it's not going to make any difference. Right. And that's what you've got to do is convince China that we have the will to use these resources, because we do have considerable resources and could make life pretty miserable for them militarily, at least for a few more years. So it's that combination, financial, economic pressure, and even propaganda. If we can't sell what America has to offer, there's a few U.S. government employees who should be showing the curb. And then, as I said, the military aspect, you have to have the right hardware and capabilities and forces and stop trying to sort of make the military woke as a social justice experiment. Amen. But you have to demonstrate that will. And once you've lost that, if the other side doesn't take you seriously, it's hard to catch up. Can be done. But it's that combination of things that I would suggest we do. It requires some clear thinking, a recognition of what the threat is and what is intended for us. And just look around at the success China has already had, and particularly in the subversion front. I mentioned Latin America, Africa, a good chunk of Europe, and even our own elite classes. And you step back and you think, holy cow, how did we get into this position? But we can get out of it, but you do have to keep your wits about you and stop funding and building up your own enemy.
But it's so critical, as you say, Grant, that you understand that you have to get out of it. If you persist in the belief that it can be business as usual interminably, whether it's financing their unrestricted warfare against us or turning a blind eye to, this Belt and Road Initiative colonization or the elite capture, not least, you will not get out of this. I just wanted to mention that, as I think we did a really powerful program in another part of our Committee on the Present Danger China webinar series about Joe Biden's takedown of the United States military. So this is yet another example of things that we cannot persist in doing. We've offered, actually, as you know, Grant, a 7-point program that is part of what we call the brief, which people can learn more about, again, at ccpatwar.com. And it starts with that recognition, as you say, of the nature of the enemy, and then it goes to, you know, getting on a war footing and cutting off the financing of these guys and making sure that we purge our elites, particularly in the political class, of those who have been compromised. If we're not willing to do these things, we're not serious, and we will, unfortunately, I think, be the victims of that stated ambition of the Chinese Communist Party to rule the world. We have to leave it at that, I'm afraid, my friend. As usual, the time has flown by, but thank you so much, Grant, for all of your service to our country, past, present, and future, and for sharing with us your insights, your admonitions, and your firsthand observations from your vantage point, forward deployed, as I say, are deeply appreciated. Keep up the great work, my friend, at the Center for Security Policy and elsewhere, and come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same again next time for our editions of Securing America, aimed at equipping you to protect the country we love. We hope you'll help us in doing just that. Learn more at securingamerica.tv, and then go forth and multiply.